right, good afternoon. Welcome to this session. I'm honored by the number of people that shows up. My name is Kurt Drapers. I'm a program manager in the SQL Server team, responsible for data platform, including data tools. Today, we're going to talk about SQL Server data tools. How many of you actually used Visual Studio database projects? Well, thank you very much for the support. Because actually, as you will find out, SQL Server data tools, I'll get this out of the way. SQL Server data tools is a continuation and an evolution of the Visual Studio database projects as we move the project into the SQL Server team. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, it's like we're going to show a lot of things to you, actually. We're going to have a very few amount of slides. And so when we started SQL Server data tools, and when we brought it into the SQL Server family, there were a couple of things that we started to work on in comparison to the Visual Studio implementation, which was mainly based around project-based development. And so what we've done is that we spend a lot of time actually adding connected functionality to the tool to allow SQL Server developers to work with from within the SQL Server or from within the Visual Studio shell and do all the tasks that they want to do. And this is just the beginning, actually. It's like we're just getting started. And then it's like we've done a lot of work with regards to the project-based system to actually improve workflow, make it more obvious for users to see what they can do, how they can leverage things. And then it's like we've made a huge investment with regards to schema development. And as you might have followed the product along around the beta times when we did the RC release in November, or the beta release in November, I should say, CDP4, and then the RC in January, is that we've made a big push to start to unify our data deployment story across SQL Server. So before that, there were actually two entities. It's like we had the SQL Server data tools, which were doing things slightly different than SSMS, and we aligned that all into one schema deployment story, which not only manifests itself inside the tools, but also from the command line inside Azure and in other places, and we'll see that later on. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take you through a tour to the product, show you what we actually can do. I will touch on these three pillars, and then it's like after I showed it, I'll actually wrap it up to make sure that I haven't forgotten anything. So let's switch and move to my demo machine. So SQL Server data tools as the Visual Studio database projects is hosted inside the Visual Studio shell. Now, there are a couple of things that are different. First of all, it's free. Second of all, you can get it for every license SQL Server 2005 and up. You don't have to upgrade to 2012. The fact that it shipped at the same time as SQL Server 2012 was just to streamline the team and the shipping semantics. You can go online today, download this tool, if you're using SQL Server 2005 Express or whatever edition, we don't care. All right, the mission of the team is to support the SQL Server platform and provide you these tools. The other thing that you should know is that this is the only tool that will support SQL Server 2012 and SQL Azure. So we support 2005, 2008, 2008 R2, 2012, and Azure. Now, one of the interesting characteristics about supporting something that's called Azure is that it seems to change more often than a box product. That might be a good thing. That might be a bad thing. For me, as the tools guy, that's a great thing because it allows me to send you new bits. This is why we actually make the bits available to you online so we can also update you. Don't worry, the payload after you've done the humongous Visual Studio installation ahead of time, the payload for the tools is 5.4 megabytes. That's the payload we will be refreshing every time. So don't worry about the bandwidth after you've done your initial installation. All right, so let's get started. So the first thing to notice is that we've added a new entity inside Visual Studio. And this will show up in Visual Studio 2010 after we installed the SSDT add-in. But it will also, by default, show up inside Visual Studio 2012. All right, so if you would go and ship the RC, pick the RC for Visual Studio 2012, hey, it's like this guy is a little darker than the other one because I switched to dark theme. But exactly the same functionality is available in Visual Studio 2010 and 2012. Right? It's part of the standard box. Right now, it's like I'll be using 2010 for the demo because that's what you can download today. Makes it more fun, right? So the first thing that you see is we added this Object Explorer. And the Object Explorer, as you might expect, gives you the standard things that you know from SSMS. Right, the objects browser there is like you can walk through your object hierarchy, you can click through your objects, and you can start working on objects. So let's open up our menu table, and that will bring us into the new table designer that we created. So we have this goal to actually replace the existing table designer because it's getting a little old, and we chose to actually implement it as a code behind designer. And the reason why we're doing this is for two reasons. First of all, it attracts to a larger set of people. Right? You see what you do. If you're a dialogue person, you can add things inside the dialogue. If you want to add a menu type and you want, for example, say, I want the creation date, you can do that. Right? And figure out here date time and say that get date is my default. All right. And you see automatically it's like the bottom line is being updated. Now, if I don't like this and it's like I want to be a code junkie, I can do it here and update the information just right into the train their cells. All right. There is some information that actually is like if you think that, hey, there's certain information missing, by default you can bring that back. This is the default version or the default view as you install it. Sorry, I have a running nose. So you can add all this information to your tree view. Okay. The other thing is that we provide you an overview of all the related objects that you have regarding your table. Now, one thing draws my attention when I actually look at this is that I see I have a foreign key relationship, but actually I have no indexes to actually support this. All right, one of the common mistakes that a lot of developers actually make, and not a surprise because these set of tables that I got was built from a code-first project. These people tend to think about the structure of their application and not so much about how to index these things. So as a DBA, we have our work cut out for us. Okay, so how do I actually add an index? Well, actually, I can do that, say, just, well, it's like, what do I want? It's like I want the restaurant ID index. Add new index. I can take my full text, spatial, all my indexes here. Okay. We have a default naming convention. Okay. And instantly you see here something else. All right. Let me zoom in for you. And so right now it's like I didn't complete my work. And I instantly see a red squiggle under my column. Now what that implies actually is that even though it's like my change has not even been committed, it's like we're telling you where your problems are. All right, so we're trying to notify, in this case, me, that it's like I haven't finished my work. All right, I can hover over this. I can tell you that it's like there's an unresolved reference. So I'm pointing right now to a column that doesn't exist, which is true. So let's address this for now. And we'll make that change. Okay. So right now, we're still at a state where I have nothing changed. I just added the update button or the buffers actually inside my system. So I have some more things that I want to do. So let's actually open up just a plain old editor. All right, and so one of the things that we've done based on the feedback that we received during the betas is make sure we are aligning the toolbars between SSDT and SSMS. And there's actually more work going on in that direction. So all the things that you can do in SSMS, you can do here. So it's like you're in a familiar place. So let's get my little script out, because I'm highly suspicious. All right, and this is another great demo feature, actually, that I can just up this. It's like, I'm highly suspicious that the developer who gave me this hasn't been thinking about indexing at all. So I have my handy-dandy script to actually figure out, it's like, what are the missing indexes? And sure enough, it's like he didn't bother to find out any of the indexes on the foreign keys, and so he has missed those. Okay, don't worry. So what we'll do is we'll say create new object, and I'm not going to here type for you. It's like we have some missing indexes that we're going to create. Now, what have I done? So far, I've made two changes, which I have not committed, but actually are connected to each other, and we are looking at them and resolving them behind the background. Now, what does this update button do that we see here? This actually will take the changes and evaluate the changes and deploy them on an as-needed basis, figuring out how to deploy these changes. So let's actually push this button. And what we'll get is actually first an overview. And I call this the non-disclosure part. All right. This is where we tell the user what he's going to do. What are the results of his changes? So right now, it's like what we've done is like we added a create column, which will be added. There is no default values, so it's like if the table doesn't allow null columns, we actually have a problem. So we're actually telling the developer, is like, hey, maybe in real life, when you do this and you add a column with no defaults, maybe you should think about this. And then we tell them all the other things that we're doing. So it's like we're actually dropping a check constraint. Because it's like we're working on the menu table. We're creating some objects. We're creating some indexes. And then we bring back the check constraint. Now, what can we do with this? We can do two things. We can say generate script. And so what that will do is actually create for us, right, the script to actually go deploy this. And as you might know, it's like we're having a lot of fun parameterizing our scripts. Because that way, it's like we can actually make them agnostics based on the target database and file locations. All right. Then it's like you see this other fun thing here. What the heck are we doing here? What we found is that when we give you guys scripts that are using SQL CMD parameters, you don't always have it turned on. And what happens in that case? I don't have prices, but this is a trivia question. What happens? Well, most likely you will execute this script in master, which is not where you want it. So in order to prevent that, it's like we actually added this piece of code to detect this and then make sure that it's like it does no harm. So this is the no harm clause in our license agreement. All right. Then we move to the database and start actually doing these things. The other thing to note is everything that we did through the designer and the changed window is done inside a transaction. So these changes are all or nothing. If they fail, we roll back. That's the default mode of how the tools work in an online fashion. All right, so enough digesting of the scripts. We'll push the update button again. We'll update the database. What that does is actually it will Let's go here. I have a mistake. And I'm running into my eyes. This is why it's like we're giving you warnings, because if you are like me and you not read very well, you have a problem. So let's go back. Actually, put back my default constraint. Okay. Hit update. Now it's like I'm not getting the warning in my highlights. Push update. And this is going to be pushed to the data operations window.
I still have a problem now, I see. Darn it. That happens when you derive from your script, dude. All right. So what I was going to show is actually that's like we're pushing these changes to the update window, and that actually runs in the background. So the reason why we're doing that is that if this is a long-running operation, we actually don't want to have those failures. So let's back out my change here because like I don't need that. Okay. Let's do this again. Update my database. And of course, now I'm completely host, like you expect. Murphy is there, which is why we have an escape clause. Okay. All right. So, after having goofed up, sorry for that. All right. So, let's do this again. Refresh my table. All right. Go here. Find the restaurant ID. Add my new index. Here, and then it's like we're going to add our new objects, which we're doing here. All right, so let's see if we now have more luck. All right, thankfully, I was getting worried. So I've made my changes. And so the key thing about these kind of changes is that it allows the user to actually work in a way that is like he's just creating objects. So for example, let's actually go to this view definition and see where is actually the user has a select star of customers. All right, so let's make sure that's like okay. So here we are, customer ID. And oops, I didn't want to do that. And user ID. Okay. All right. Here we are, user ID. All right. So now it's like the user still does a create view. All right. So if we update, we actually see, hey, it actually exists. So you don't want to do an alt create. You just want to do an alter. So we'll push an alter statement to you. All right. This actually is the declarative system moving into the online environment, allowing the user to make some changes. All right. So what else can we do? So you saw the table designer. You saw how we can actually do queries. It's like you can do show plans, all these things. One of the other aspects that we can do, which we'll see later, is how we can actually view data and how we do debugging. But we'll get to that in a moment. All right. So let's actually see what we've done. So what we're trying to do here is try to bring the connected development environment for SQL Server into Visual Studio as a first-class citizen. The main thing that we've done is added this navigational structure that looks very familiar to you because, yes, it was intentionally based on SSMS and brought the T-SQL editor and made sure that they are actually mapping functionality-wise. This is a cue that I need to get out. Okay. So that's the first thing that we've done. The second part, which we've done, is we did a lot of work actually making sure IntelliSense works for all versions. So you have IntelliSense for 2005 and up, right, including SQL Azure. I will show you T-SQL debugging later on when we get there. You can edit and view data. And there's other things that we're going to show you later in terms of, like, we automatically will detect from the browser if the world changes underneath you and updates the browser environment. Things like schema comparison, all these aspects we'll actually get later. Now, this error information that we're showing you is actually derived from the model that we're building up in the background. So even though you're not creating a project like you might be used to in Visual Studio database projects, what happens from the Object Explorer when you're actually inside a database is that we're building up a model representation, so a semantic model where we understand the objects and the dependencies, and we use that to actually work against. All right. That's why, as you will see, it's like we can take the same designer experience, use it both online as offline, and we'll see that in a moment. All right, so we made a bunch of changes. Let's go. Actually, the next slide is not very interesting, because we're going to make some more changes, and we want to do that inside a project environment, because these are going to be more elaborate changes. All right, so let's get started. Let's get the property window out of the way. So we have our database. All right, we have our objects in there. And so how do we get started creating a project? Now, most of you know these structures like file, new, project, and then go into SQL Server. And it's like, hey, you see there's only one database template anymore. It's like there are no server projects, no user database. We folded everything into a single project template. There is actually a much faster way and a more convenient way. You take your database, you simply say create project. All right, so what I just did is created a project by right-clicking on the database name. I'm giving it a name. I'm telling it that I want to create a solution. I want to add it to source code control. I want to import my permissions if I want to. It's like, what is the organizational structure of my files that I want by schema and object? If you're a schema-oriented person, this is the default that you might prefer. When you hit start, right now it's like we'll first ask, it's like, where do we want to place this inside our source code control? All right, so right now it's like I'm talking to source code control, which always takes a moment for us to get that done. And then it's like, hopefully, it's like my import will start. And what import will do is it will actually thread all the objects and put them into source code files. So it's done right now. And let's get the Object Explorer out of the way, and let's switch to the other side of the screen to the Object Explorer. Now, if you look at pending changes, you will see that it's like I have a whole set of files that are currently checked out, ready to be checked in. So we created a solution, we created all the files, and I'm ready to actually check this in. So let's call this baseline. All right, I'm using TFS Express on my machine here. Which is a 2012 version. So yes, I want to save the solution. Okay, I'm done. I saved these things. And let's go back to my Solution Explorer. So in my Solution Explorer, you see that it's like we've done a lot of cleanup with regards to is like Visual Studio database projects. First of all, it's like we reduced the numbers of files that we're actually generating. We used to have the strategy to generate a file for every object. Right now is like we only do that for the root objects and combine all these objects into the root object. You also see that it's like it's a flatter structure than we used to. Now, based on the feedback, we're actually reevaluating if we need to bring back the old option as an alternative, but we'll definitely keep this one. So right now what we have is a bunch of source code files. Right, as you might know, is like if you worked with Visual Studio database projects, what we do with those database files, with the SQL script files, is we create a model from that. So that already happened in the background. So if I go back to the same menu table, I can open up the same designer experience and do exactly the same amount of work that I've done in the online version. The only thing right now is the difference is I'm changing a source code file. All right, I can also, it's like, actually do refactoring from within this. So, for example, if my menu type is not the way that I want it, I can actually go and say, let's make an arbitrary change, which I don't like anyhow. But then it's like I can change my menu type, and what it will do, just like you're used to, it will tell me it's like where are all the changes that I need to go make. Right, in this case, it's like the table structure and some indexes. So I'll cancel out of this. But that's another thing that you can actually do is inside your project. So let's go to my my orders table and add a column. So right now, it's like I want to add a status column. It's a type of integer. It cannot be. It has cannot be null. The default value is zero. Okay. So that's what I want to have right now. Now, in order to actually use this, we have a way inside our fictive company of how to deal with this. We want to introduce a lookup table or an enum table. But somebody already wrote this. Right, how do I get that into my system? Right, happens a lot. It's like you have some script laying around that you want to bring into your world, that you want to reuse inside a project. So how do we go about this? So let's get the properties guy out of the way. What we do is import script. Say, it's like, what is the script that we want to import? I have a bunch of enum laying around. It's like next, finish, and all right, it's done. I can go to my pending changes to see actually what the changes were that were done. All right, it's like we updated the project file, as you can see. All right. You see that it's like we added some files with some functions in it. We added some a table file, and we added a stored procedure file. So all these files are added now. So it's like let's just be happy and it's like check them in. Yes. Okay. Now, so I have my enums. So I have a set of functions. I have a set of stored procedures, or one stored procedure, small set. I have a sequence, which we'll see later. And so let's actually take my status column and start using my lookup table. And so the way that we want to use my lookup table is by adding a computed column. And so I'm going to add my computed column like this. All right, so what I've just done is like I actually added the status string column, which takes my status, does a lookup in my lookup table, and then it actually transfers these. And then, of course, I want to make sure that it's like I have a constraint that makes sure that this actually is all kosher, all right, and that the data is within the So something isn't right, right? It's like I see red squiggles, so that should set off alarm bells. I forgot to add my comma. So all right, so here we are. And let's see if I can build this. So let's build. It seems to be happy. All right. So OK, so if this is happy, what can I do next? Well, I want to validate if this actually still makes sense. So what we can do now is like we can hit F5. And F5, for those of you who are developers inside other languages, means it's like, well, basically build and debug. Right? In our world, it's like what we've done is like we're using SQL Server Express LocalDB, which is a new version of SQL Server 2012, which actually is hosted underneath a parent process. And our parent process is Visual Studio at this point in time. So if you hit F5, what we do is we do a deployment to our local database instance. So let's see how that actually looks like. So here you see that we added LocalDB database, and it's like the project name and the database name are the same. So here are our tables, right? It's like we have our menu table, we have our views, we have our stored procedures. So all the objects are now there. So okay, so let's actually see what we have here. So let's go And let's see if there's any data. Oh, there is no data actually inside my enums table. So one of the things that happened while I was importing this is that while importing my script, it's like we create a script ignored file. And what does this mean? These are all the objects that is like are not objects, but it's like they're in your file, and so we don't know what to do with them. In this case, there were a set of statements that populated the enum table. And this is a common thing, right? It's like you want to have some data inside your project that you want to drag along and deploy with your application. So let's actually take these objects and start using them. So, okay, let's clip them out. We're going to add a new script, right? Because it's not a schema object. So it's like we're going to add a script. And we're going to add the script of the type post-deployment script. So this will run after your deployment is done. So we're going to add this. We'll be automatically added to source code control. All right, so our object is there. Let's hit F5. Okay. All right. Cleaned up down, hit F5. All right, let's go back to my table, my enum table, and hey, now I actually have my data inside my enum lookup table, so I can start using this. Now, there are a couple of other things that you can do with this data editor. It actually supports copy and paste. You can drag and drop things straight out of Excel. And one of the things that you actually might like is that you can, is turn them into insert statements, so you actually can use them somewhere else. So you can just point it to an arbitrary table, generate some insert statements, and help you get it that way. Sorry? Oh, if I can repeat the step. Oh, I'm sorry. So one of the things you can, so if you're inside the table editor, there is this option called script. There's another option called script to file. All right, and what that does, it takes the content of the database and turns them into insert statements. Sorry, I couldn't hear very well. All right, so now we have some of our data available. And so let's actually, let's see what we have pending. Let's check this in. All right, so I'm done with that. And it's time for me now. It's like, all right, so we're in a state. I feel pretty happy. What I want to do is I want to save this state. Now, I'm in source code control, so I could go to a source code control and say it's like write label and label my state of my project inside source code control. Now, from a database point of view, it's like many times we want to be able to take our artifact and just go back to it and be able to look at it, deploy it, compare it, etc. So one of the things that we're introducing in 2012 is the ability to actually create a snapshot. All right. A snapshot is a point in time representation of the output format of the project. And so the output format of a project these days is a DECPAC, which is a single file transport mechanism for all the things that come out of the project. So it contains your schema, it contains your setting, and all the other things. So I can start to do things like, okay, so you have this DECPAC. Why don't you compare this DECPAC with, for example, my database? Not the local DB one. Okay. But this one. Okay. So let's do that. So this allows me to actually take a representation that I created, right, save it on disk, and always go back to it. I can also ask a customer or another user, right, say, take the command line tool, create me a DECPAC, send it to me so I can compare what you have with what I think you should have. So if you're a support person or want to figure out like why that customer database behaves different than what you're seeing, it's an ideal way to actually get the status. Now, one of the things that we see here is like in schema compare is that we did a lot of changes to make things a lot more obvious and easier to use. If you're used to the Visual Studio version, it's like you had to navigate through the tree to actually see what the changes are. What we've done is like we changed our approach to actually visualize all the changes as much as possible through the code diffing visualization. So things like set ANSI null options, right? If they would be different, they would show up as objects or as properties on site an object. All right, in this case, we're adding some objects. Here we are changing some objects. And you see the supporting objects are actually below there. All right, so that's our snapshot. OK. So we're now at a point where we feel pretty good. Let's see if we can actually make use of my system here. So let's go to my stored procedure, all right, that I have here. And I want to see if this actually works. So let's view the code. Let's put a breakpoint in there. All right. And go back here and say that we want to debug my procedure. So OK, so I have an enum name. I have an enum value. All right, and let's use 10 as the enum value for now. So this will actually pick up the information from the project system. We know it's like that these two databases, the LocalDB database that's associated with your project, and the source code are related. And the first thing that we'll do is we'll actually create you a startup script. And so what you see here is like we generate a fragment inside your T-SQL editor. Why? Because you don't constantly want to go to this dialog for entering parameters. All right, what you see here is like we take all your parameter values and actually place them inside regular T-SQL values, or variables, sorry. All right, so now I can start stepping through this. All right, debug, step into 11, right? So now this actually steps into my enum code, right? My set enum stored procedure. It tests if the value exists. Doesn't exist yet. Okay, so it will insert, will give me a return value. All right, so now if I want to repeat this, I don't have to go back. I can simply say execute with debugger, right, from within the editor. So execute with debugger, or Alt F5. Start stepping in. It exists, yes, because we just inserted it 1 moment ago, right? We update the code, and there we go. So simple proof that we actually, the logic in our stored procedure, which was, of course, very dumb and simple, but it worked. Now, the reason why we're doing this is that we know that it's like T-SQL debugging could be a value, but it's like you have this problem that it requires sysadmin privileges. I'm sorry that hasn't changed. Right, which is why it's like we're building up this local sandboxed environment underneath your development environment where you can make your own tests and you can do and you do no harm to anybody else but yourself. Right, that allows you to actually work in complete isolation and drive these things home. Now, while I'm actually here, right, I'm in my set enum thing, I'm updating the enums table, and I want to know is like where enum is actually being used. So I want to find all the references of this table. So one of the things that we now added is the ability to actually say, go to definition and find all references while you're inside your project mode. All right, so if you're navigating through your objects, so in this case, it's like, OK, so it's inside this table, right? So inside the create table statement. Now it's like we want to know where values are being referenced. All right, we can ask the same question. right? If you are going to a view, for example, right, so you're inside a view definition, customers, you can simply say, it's like, okay, go to definition, right? And from it within the editor, and you can also, if you remember all the shortcuts, you can do this from the keyboard. You can navigate through your source code without actually having to go visit the browser. So since we've introduced the product, it's like there was one thing that actually we couldn't do while we released the product in March, is that we had this object or option inside Visual Studio Database project called Schema View, which allows you to navigate over the semantic model or the model inside the project. So since then, we actually released a power tool that actually allows you to do exactly the same thing. All right, so here you have a power tool that makes projects show up at the same level as your databases. You can navigate through the same information. Oops, that's the wrong one, sorry. So if you go to your orders table, it's like you can do all the same things that you find here. All right, you can refactor this. You can view the code. You can look it up in Solution Explorer, what is the object. And besides all that, we actually, for the power tool, also adds the ability to script your objects like you're used to inside Visuals or in SSMS. All right, just some little things that we're adding while we're trucking along. All right, so I have my... the question is like, what is the power tool called? Well, the power tool is called SSDT Power Tools. If you go to the extension manager in Visual Studio, Tools, Extension Manager, and you go to the online gallery, and you just simply type in search as, well, let's just do it. SSDT, you will hit it, all right? And you can install this, all right? So we have our information there. It's like it's inside our project. We did all the things. So I think for now, we should be good. Let's build one more time. I was able to deploy locally. So now how do I get it out and update my target database? So let's clean some windows here. I don't want this anymore. So how do I deploy this out? So in Visual Studio 2010, it's like if you hit F5, we were trying to deploy, and customers hated that. Because many times, it's like you just wanted to verify your changes, and you didn't want to push it built out. So we actually changed the metaphor to a build and publish metaphor, just like ASP.NET, where it's like you have to explicitly jump out of the cycle to deploy your database. So deploying your database is done through publishing. You publish, you push, you tell me which database you want to. All right, you can push it to the same database if you want to update it. So here we go. Publish pushes it to the same data operations window, all right, which will run and do make those changes for you available. You could also generate the script, of course, in the same fashion. So here we go, and it's like we updated our database on site, my live live instance here that sits here. So right now I should have an enum table, right? And that enum table should have data in it, and it does. So it looks like my work has been deployed. All right, so let's quickly go back to our PowerPoint before, so we can continue our crusade after that. So project-based development gives me a way to actually organize my SQL objects inside source code files, allows me to navigate over the source code files using things like go to definition, find all references. I can refactor my code. We introduced the notion of F5 level debugging, which allows you to actually build your local sandbox. Now, you could use a shared server if you want to, right? If you don't want to leverage the local sandboxed environments, but you want to work on a shared server, and every time you hit F5, you update your shared server, the only thing that you have to do is update the debug connection string inside your project settings. All right, so that allows you to go and do this. This fully integrates into source code control. Any source code control provider that you actually is supported in Visual Studio. So if you want to use GitHub or Mercurial or PVCS or TFS or SourceSafe, we don't care. We're completely agnostic from that. Under the covers, we're leveraging MS Build to actually be our build infrastructure, so you can integrate this into a team build server or other build services. We have a set of command line tools available, which I will talk about later. So that allows you to actually make all these changes also from the command line and do extractions and deployments from a command line tool. If you are a programmer and you want to do this programmatically, that same thing has an API which you can leverage. Point-in-time snapshots allows you to actually serialize the state of your project into a single file. So it allows you to compare, it allows you to take a snapshot of your project and to visualize those changes later using schema differencing and schema compare. We didn't touch on the static code analysis, it's still there. We're working on actually adding the rule set and making it even more interesting. All right, so let's now go to our deployment story. So what you've seen me do so far is like I worked in my local sandbox, I updated my local instance. But what it becomes really interesting when we're actually going to deploy this information or this database and start moving it to something like SQL Azure. Why? Because SQL Azure and SQL Server are not the same beasts. There are syntactical and semantical differences. So how do we go about this? Well, let's just try this, right? So we're going to our Dinner Now database, and one of the things we're going to do is we're going to switch the target of our database. As you know from Visual Studio 2010 or 2008 GDR, it's like you can switch between versions and we will retarget and recompile the source code and actually go and tell you what you go and have to fix. Now, most of the time, when you were going upwards in SQL Server versions, if you have a 2005 project, you can deploy it to 2008. If you have a 2008 project, deploying it to 2012. Because SQL Server has been very religious about providing backwards compatibility and trying not to break you. Now, in SQL Azure, that's a different story, because the amount of functionality available in Azure is not at parity and probably will never be at parity. There are certain features that you probably will never see show up in the SQL Azure database. So what we do is we actually try to help you by being able to take your source code version of your database, switch your target version, and simply build. So we take build solution. And then it's like we will tell you, it's like, what is preventing you from moving onto an Azure database? And the thing is, like, you don't have to go to Azure. You can do this on your workstation and get ready. So what this tells us is that our create sequence statement is a non-supported object on our target platform. Right? And indeed, sequences are an unsupported object right now inside SQL Azure. We also have two tables which don't have a clustered index, which is one of the requirements for SQL Azure. So the tool is helping us by pointing this out, and our main task is to actually go and fix them. So let's take our create table statement. Well, we actually don't need it. It was a leftover from one of my colleagues, and that's actually true. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to properties and simply say it's like this is not in the build. So that actually takes care of that. So, and what that does actually, by putting it not in the build, it will not show up in my model. I just excluded it. I left it inside my project, source file still there, but it's not going to show up inside my thing. Okay, so let's build again. I now have only my two tables left. So let's actually update this guy to become a clustered index. If I can find my delete key. All right. Save my scripts. And you see, it's like once I made the change, the error automatically goes away. It's like, here we go, last one. All right. So good. It's building. We're supposed to be clean. And so now, how do I get it up there? Well, the way I get it up there is by publishing it to my Azure environment. So I would have to go to Windows Azure. Right now, it's like I've already know what the I wrote down the name on a in a file, so I don't have to go to the portal to figure that one out. So let's look that up real quick, because I cannot remember these names. It's a little bit too cryptic for me. All right, so let's use this. And if I'm not mistaken, my password should be like this. All right. I can save this as a profile. And the reason why is like I want to save this as a profile, because if I do this more often, then I actually don't have to remember all this information. The other thing is if I take that profile, I just backed out of this, say add existing item, publish profile, add it to my project. If I double click on publish, it will just remember it and I can do very quick publishing. I don't have to remember my settings. I can say go to script or hit publish. What this will do is it will actually go to my Azure instance. Now, right now, it's like during the conference, that seems to be a tricky thing. It's like I have a 50-50 ratio between this morning and now whether I was able to deploy my database. So actually, it seems to be going well. That's a good thing. Already had enough things not work. All right. So what do you see here, actually? So there is some interesting differences. All right, so first of all, it's like, hey, why are we creating a master script? Trivia question. Anybody? Check the server to see what's committed. Inventful, but that's not the reason. Exactly, thank you. SQL Azure doesn't allow you to use a use statement. Now, that's trivial, right? We all have that inside our scripts. So we are actually required to create two scripts. We create the master script. And if you would actually go and view what the master script looks like, right? So view script. And we'll up the size here a little bit. Okay. What it will do is it will actually just create the database in this case because it didn't exist. All right, that's the only reason why it had to do that. Now, normally we would say use database and continue, but in this case, we actually have to go and then switch to our secondary script, which is this one, which will create all the objects that we have. So this starts off in the Dinner Now database and then start to create our objects. All right, so let's see if we actually were really successful. So let's go to our instance. I am hooked up here. As you can see, I can use the Object Explorer. Let's refresh this guy. Yep, there is our Dinner Now database. Dinner test was still there. So let's see once it's figured out, it's like that it's there. All right, enums, let's check if our data is there. As you see, latency is an issue if you do this from directly from your console. So that's why it's like actually working offline is actually a benefit. All right, you see that the data is there. So we're all good to go. So let's flip back to our presentation real quick. Excuse me? So the observation thank you, is that I haven't checked in my files. And so the question is, what am I actually deploying? Well, since I'm deploying from my development workstation, I'm just deploying my local bits. So if it's checked in or checked out, it doesn't matter. Now, if we would follow a more rigid process, which I highly suggest, whereas like you check in, then you have a build server producing your deck back, and then you take that deck back and you deploy that, then the gentleman would be totally right, and we would be looking at apples and oranges at the moment. Thank you for making that note. So the question is, like, can I selectively deploy? What you're building inside your deck pack is what you're deploying. So what is it? It's like, actually, so that's a good segue. Let's, I'll get to your question. Don't worry. But it's like, I would like to address that in a broader context. So what you've seen in the schema deployment aspect is that everything we do under the covers is model-based. So we create a model representation of your database. So you're always defining what you want, not how you want to get there, right? That's the key aspect of our declarative deployment engine. So we feed that model-based representation, which is a blueprint, into our incremental deployment engine, which goes and figures out what the differences are between your source and your target, and figure out what are the steps to get through A to B. We do that for the versions that we've already discussed. We discussed that in the beginning. And we actually showed you that we can retarget your project. So I showed you how you can take a 2012 project and move it, or 2008 project it was, and actually move it to Azure. But you can also go the other way. Sometimes you have a need to actually take your project and go back in time. Oh, I need to deploy this to SQL Server 2005. Right, and I wrote this against 2008. The way that we do this is through DECPACS. So DECPACS is the format, the single file format that is being produced as the output. I'll show you that format in a moment. We can deploy it in a connected fashion over a simple TDS connection. So what you've seen me do right now is connect to Azure over TDS. We could also generate the T-SQL script, and so you can use your own tools. All right. The deck is actually what makes this work. Now, deck actually shows up on a lot more places than you might think. Right? There are deck verbs in SSMS 2012. There are deck verbs that are supported inside the SQL Azure Management Portal and the import-export service. All these endpoints and tools build around the same transport mechanism, which is a deck file. Now, finally, it's like you can also take these files and push them out from the command line. So it's time to switch in. Actually, let me make sure I'm answering your question. So what you're deploying is what you've built. All right, so if the change was in the build, that's what you deploy. You cannot say, if the package says, it's like, I want A, B, and C, you cannot at deploy time say, I only want B. All right? You have a blueprint, and that's what you deploy. So let's switch out our Visual Studio environment for something much more fancy. The tool of choice, right? It's like, it runs everywhere. So what we do, actually, is we give you a command line tool called SQL Package. And SQL Package is the tool that allows us to do these things. We can walk up to a database and extract the deck back from it. We can take a deck back and deploy it to publish. We can ask for the differences between the database and a deck pack or two deck packs by asking for a diff report. Right? Or we can point or script it out to a T-SQL script file. Now, the way that works is actually very simple. So actually, let's start. I already created a baseline before I started. So this is the baseline. This matches actually the restore that I did at the beginning. So let's do a diff. Now what I'm going to use is answer files. And an answer file is nothing else than all the command line switches in a text file that I'm going to pass to the tool. And this is to prevent errors during demos, but it also helps you. Now the good thing about answer files is that it's like you can actually augment them from the command line. So if you have settings that you reuse all the time, and you have one thing that's different, your database name maybe, that's the only thing that you would provide on the command line. All right, so let's do a diff, and the diff is going to be between the baseline DECBAC and my dinner now database that we have on our local server. And we're going to create an XML file out of that. So SQL package, diff, add sign in front of it. And so what this will do, it will actually take the engine, the same engine that we use to deploy, figure out what the differences are, compare those with my local host, and spit out an XML file with the changes. All right. Any day now. Thank you. Excellent. Yes. So we see that it's there. Control plus. All right, here we go. So what you get out of this is an XML file that tells you exactly the same information as that overview dialog that you saw. These are the objects that we're going to drop. These are the objects that we're going to alter. And these are the objects we're going to create. And those are the ones that we're going to refresh. All right. So what this allows you to do is when you're deploying things, there are some expectations. If you go from version 2 to version 3, you know what your expected diff might be, for example, if you're doing this as an ISV or something. All right. So now you can run a test run at the customer's database without changing anything. Say it's like, here is version 3 of my DECBAC. Run it against this, do exactly what I just did here, look at the output XML file, and if there are things in there that you are not expecting, you have something to look at. All right? Because now it's like you might get into a territory where it's like you want to look at how things can fail. So, okay, so that gives me the diff report. So let's extract one. So notepad, extract. All right, very simple. The action is extract. I want to override the file. It's like I want to do it from my source server and create this DECBAC. So very simple, SQL package, extract. All right. And what this will do is we'll actually take my database and turn it into a DECBAC so I can hand it out. I can feed this DECBAC into schema compare. All right. So right now what I'm doing is creating this DECBAC. All right. There you are. All right, so let's close all this, close my solution, and simply say that I want to do a schema comparison. I want to do a schema comparison between some files. Let's go to my project, to my demo directory. All right, so I'm going to take the baseline, and I'm going to compare that with the version that I just created. All right, bang, let's compare those. And here we have all the differences. I have no source code, I have no projects, but I can look what the differences are and see what actually happens, and what would be the changes that I have. All right. Now, the last thing is, like, for some people, it's like they just want to have a script because that's what they feel comfortable with. And there's nothing wrong with that. So let's actually open up script. And so what that will do, it will actually create the update script to go from A to B. So we'll take the baseline, we'll actually compare it with, in this case, our current state of the database, and create a script of how to get from A to B. So SQL package and script. And that will actually go and create me a update script of how to go from one version to the other version. All right, 1, 2, 3. And you should be done. There we are. I just noticed that I'm probably comparing in the wrong switched order. Okay, so here's our script that we generated. Whereas, like, we make all the changes, yes, we're dropping all the indexes instead of creating them. I switched the order, I'm sorry. I did that wrong in my script. So, but it shows you actually how you can get this done, not just from a fancy UI, but also from the command line. And as I said, you can also do this from an API. So, in summary, so SQL Server Data Tools actually provides you three experiences. A connected experience, where it's like we're providing a familiar way to actually navigate through your sources and through your objects, where we're trying to work on productivity and allow you to edit your schemas. We're providing you a project-based environment where you can work in full isolation, where you can integrate into the application lifecycle through source code control, where you can have a better navigation experience and therefore insight in what happens inside your schema. We do this in a very declarative way, where we support multi-targeting, so you can move your databases around. And the DECPAC is the format for moving all these things around. So that said, it's like there are a bunch of resources. You can go get the tool now. As I said, it's free. It supports 2005 and up. We have a blog where you can look for announcements. We have a forum where you can ask questions. The other sessions are already done, so it's like that's not very interesting. We are on the booth. It's like cloud on your terms, station number 11. There is a bunch of colleagues. I'm not sure if there's actually anybody here because they're supposed to have booth duty. So there's one. Yin is here, so he can help out asking questions later. And that said, it's like I really would like you to invite you to, it's like all these slides, to create, send in your eval form so we know what you think about this. Hopefully this is useful for you. Hopefully you can use the tool. If you have feedback, I really want to know. Gert.drapers@microsoft.com or @datadude@Twitter. Please let us know. Come to the booth. Talk to us. Tell us what you want. That said, have a great day, and thanks for listening.